If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our topic is how to practice living in Samadhi. So, what is your peaceful place? Do you even have one? So many people today, when they're stressed or they're uncomfortable in their lives, will seek to find some way to avoid or to numb out that pain. Many head for the bar, or they take a pill, or they do something to distract themselves. But tonight we're going to learn a different approach, something that maybe you have associated with Himalayan peaks and caves and yogis and people like that. But I'm going to share with you how you can live in Samadhi yourself today as you go about your life, just as you're living it, but perhaps from a different perspective. So let's begin with a meditation. Excuse me, I'm going to be clearing some people tonight. Some of you have been, what I'm clearing is the causal realm for many of you people, which is in the throat and neck area. It's where you go unconscious. When you're meditating and you lose focus, you will notice that you fall back into the back of your throat. When you're consciously focused, you're in the center of your head or just slightly above the head. The eyes are turned upward and you're focused very solidly in what is called the tenth door, the tisratil, or the soul, or the atma. But when you lose that focus, you fall back into the back of the throat. I want you to watch the next time you fall asleep. Try to be very conscious of that point when you drift off, and you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll have a conscious experience of what it is to fall literally back inside yourself into what is called the causal realm, which is the realm of the emotions, where most people are very caught up. This is why when you get emotional, it affects your throat. When you get nervous, when you get you're confronted, when you start to cry, notice how the throat chakra constricts and you begin to squeak. It begins to close down. That's what fear does, or insecurity, or reaction emotionally does. But back to the sleeping process. Many of us drop out of higher consciousness back into one of the lower planes, usually the emotional plane, where so many of us are hung up, and we go to sleep instead of sitting conscious and aware and consciously soul traveling. It's going to sound like an oxymoron, perhaps, but yogis that teach, maybe I shouldn't say yogis. Well, yeah, I will say yogis. Yogis who have transcended the passive state of meditation and are practicing active spiritual inner awareness. I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, well, you can't think when you're transmitting at this level of consciousness. It totally doesn't work. And if I get off on another strain of energy, then I lose what I was talking about because I'm not thinking. I'm just sourcing a stream of consciousness. Samadhi. We're going to be looking at it from many, many angles today, but I would like to give you really some reference points for not only how to actively practice it, but also reference points for divine consciousness. And you'll notice in these weekly seminars, I work on many, many levels of consciousness. Some of you need to move into one level, and so I may use a whole show and just focus on that particular approach. Others of you are more advanced and are ready to go deeper and are ready to really become fully the embodiment of a self-realized and God-realized person. Some of you are very close to that, particularly some of the young people today who have virtually had no spiritual training per se because they've come in just borderline enlightened. And they have a little patience with that slow process because they're meant to quicken and activate and kind of, they've kind of come in hitting the ground running. I was talking to a friend the other day who has a three-year-old child that's just really, really frustrated because she cannot fully manifest the wisdom and the power of the advanced soul that she is in this little child's body. And I told her grandmother, I said, talk to her because even though she's a child, that little baby is going to understand spiritually what you're saying, even though the physical body, brain, mind, and all of that still has to mature and grow up. So we can talk to these advanced children and souls as if we were talking to a fully developed, wise entity, a wise being in that little child's body. And one of the things that they have to learn is patience, which is extremely frustrating for these children because they're not used to the constriction and limitation of the density of not only a human body, but having to wait patiently until it matures its nervous system and its chakra system and is able to integrate the power of who they are spiritually. So we're having lots and lots of kids coming in today with this kind of impetus to immediately start exercising their gifts. We're finding more and more very young children who are entering ministry at like age 7 and even younger. 3 and 4 and 5 and 6-year-old children are doing things like getting money to build wells in Africa where people don't have clean drinking water. There was a little girl that is responsible now for, I think it's something like 6 or 7 wells that she was watching with her mother, one of the programs where it was showing the children that didn't have clean drinking water. She's like 4 years old, and she said, well, how much does a well cost? And she ran in, got her little piggy bank, and she said, do I have enough money? And that's how it all started. Now it's a worldwide outreach to drill wells in places where they don't have clean drinking water. So that's what these kids are doing today. So let's go into an inner meditation now and take a deep breath and feel the anointing of the spiritual consciousness that you are come very present and alive within you. Some of you are seeing a purple light behind your closed eyelids. Some of you are feeling the body rock back and forth. Some of you are feeling a warm, kind of like warm chills flow down over your body. I'm experiencing all three of those things as I'm speaking right now. And that is the presence of the spiritual traveler lineage. And that's the lineage that I work on. And that those of you that listen to the show are being introduced to, if you haven't already been introduced at a previous time. So again, what is your peaceful place? And when you're stressed and hard-pressed with the things of the world, where do you go to seek balance and calm in your life? What do you do? What do you do with your body, your emotions, your mind, and the actions that you choose to opt for when you're in great states or conditions of distress and stress? What is your personal sanctuary, your inner utopia, your place of refuge? It's a very, very important resource that we need now. Today I was looking on the internet, and my gosh, we've had these tremendous solar blasts of energy that have impacted our Earth. In fact, we're having another one now, tonight, and another one tomorrow. And there's been something like 10, 11 different earthquakes. Fortunately, not in areas where there was any damage. A lot of them were in areas that were not heavily populated or in areas that didn't affect large masses of people. And of course, that's one of the things that we try as best we can within the Galactic Command to deflect earthquakes out away from densely populated metropolises and areas where it's going to impact people and take lives. We do the very best we can within karmic law to do that. But it's a tremendous surcharging of energy through the brain and the central nervous system, which is much like your own electrical wiring. And as I show you how to move into that peaceful place, that peaceful sanctuary that we're going to create now, this will be something you can do to rest your consciousness and kick back and chill and be and know who you are and what you are eternally, so that you can ride through more gracefully and graciously and easily during the energetic shifts that we're going to be rapidly in right now. The Earth is like in that crowning process, you know, and the baby's ready to emerge. We're just at that point when we're ready to move into this higher state of consciousness. There's nothing you have to do. There's nothing you have to worry about. There's nothing you have to plan for or think about. You just need to chill and move back into who you are and find a way to stay in that inner citadel of peace that you can very easily create. And that's what we're going to do now. So move your spiritual inner awareness now. A deep breath, as deep as you can, into your inner self. You can visualize yourself dropping like a ball of golden light, that would be your soul, right down through the top of your head, sinking deeply into that core essence that we would call your inner spirit, your inner spiritual state. And imagine, if you will, in your mind's eye, the most perfect sanctuary that you could imagine. It could be anywhere in nature that you find restful and beautiful. It could be a beautiful Himalayan mountain cave. It could be with a special spiritual master that you particularly love. You could go into their ashram inside yourself in your inner realms. You could be taking a walk in the clouds with the Master Jesus. You could be sitting in meditation with your spiritual mentors. Or you could be up in one of the starcraft. Do you know that in every one of our motherships, we have a whole sanctuary dedicated to the presence of God? I think I'll take you there right now. That will be a place that you can visit anytime you like. Again, you don't even have to be beamed up. You just need to put yourself in your mind's eye aboard ship. Just take a deep breath and be there. And as the atoms rearrange themselves to accommodate your picture of reality and your intention, you'll find that you're in the center of a beautiful room. I say it's beautiful, although there's absolutely nothing visible in it. That's the whole point, is to enter into the presence, the living presence of God, without props, without gimmicks, without any unnecessary symbols or objects. You're simply in the presence of all power, all loving, all light, all peace. And then, if you want it a little more ornate, you can do the interior decorating yourself. Because in this mock-up of the sanctuary, you can make it however you'd like it to be. So take a deep breath and be aware of the effulgent light that fills the sanctuary of homage and sacred repose. This is where we come when we need to center and reboot our computers, so to speak, refresh and regenerate. I have goosebumps all over my body because the light is entering every cell. I feel the energy coursing up my spine. And tears just automatically spring to my eyes. Of course, I've been there a lot. I'm very familiar with it. And maybe some of you are too. So just be aware of the vitality. It's peaceful and yet it's tremendously vital and alive. And it's recharging your spiritual batteries right now. You need to be healed. Accept and receive that healing now. You need inspiration and encouragement. Receive that now. Do you need clarity and a sense of greater direction? Receive that now. Do you need to be cleared of fear and worry and psychic congestion? Do you feel like you're clogged up? Take a deep breath. And allow the white, pure light of Almighty God to wash through you and cleanse you and dissolve everything in you that isn't for your highest good right now. And receive the peace of God deep into every part of your brain, to every part of your emotions and your feelings, to all of your thoughts, to the cells of your body. We speak the peace of God to the top of your head, to the bottom of your feet. And we speak the peace of God into your personal life, into your homes, into your children, into your loved ones and spouses, into your workplace, into your car. That wherever you are, you may be aware that you walk in that sacred sanctuary. You never have to leave it. You can mock it up right inside you. You can know that it is in you because it's part of you. It's home with a capital H. It is that one place that you can never really leave. You can never, ever lose your home in the eternal. Never. You will always have access to the presence of God. It doesn't matter where you are or who you are or anything. It has nothing to do with anything in time and space. It's your eternal state. Move into that place of peace now. And create an anchor point. You could touch your forefinger and your thumb together in a little Om mudra. And just tell yourself, I am anchoring. As you touch your finger and your thumb, I am anchoring my sacred sanctuary of peace within me now. And I will remember any time that I need to activate this place, I can just touch my forefinger and my thumb together and say, sacred sanctuary of peace is present now. And enter the peace of God. Enter it so fully that you have a strong reference point. You can enter it just before you go to sleep at night. I know one woman who crawls into the feathery wings of Archangel Michael, and that's where she sleeps every night. I know another woman who asks to be wrapped in the robe of Sai Baba as she goes to sleep at night. I know another woman who likes to crawl into the arms of the Master Jesus and go to sleep at night. How do you go to sleep at night? Think about it. How do you send your soul forth just before you fall asleep? Because your last thought and your intention carries you into the inner planes where you do work for God. You didn't think you were doing nothing, did you? Your physical body is rested, but you are not your physical body. Your physical body goes forth in great and noble adventures with a great heart to serve and to help people. People that, while you're asleep here, are awake on the other side of the earth. And those same people that you help when you're out of your body, when you're awake in your daytime, they are asleep and they come and serve and minister to you. It's a loving family that we have in this universe. And I want you to always be aware of that. Love and the love of God is everywhere. That is what is real and true. Not the things happening on the outer surface of life. Those are karmic patterns, unfinished business being worked out by ego momentums, locked in, let's say, disputative states of unbalance in time and space. They have nothing to do with you. You are the emissaries of God's peace. You are the peaceful ones who have come to reveal the higher divine realms and worlds to this planet, who has, by and large, a population that's asleep and not aware of anything that is truly happy, joyous, and peaceful. They will know of the joy and love and peace of God through you, through your example, through your words, through your books, through your teachings, through your emails, but most of all, by just watching you as you go about your day, as you live your life, you're always being an example. Yes, that's the real mission. I will give you two very simple techniques that you can also use as mock-ups. Say, for example, you're in an area that has a lot of negativity. You can use a magic bubble. Have you ever seen the deep sea divers that go down in these plexiglass bubbles so they can observe the sharks or whatever in the deep water? You can visualize around yourself a translucent sphere of divine protection so that you can walk in the density of any place and you are completely contained in your divine sanctuary of perfect peace and perfect protection. And you can state that nothing but the love of God and what's for your highest spiritual love and good can come into you. And only that which is of your highest divine loving nature can go forth through that sphere. And just see that around your body. You can create it in any way that you want. We're seeing lots of orbs and spheres today. And those are the spiritual vehicles for other life forms that now are becoming visible in our dimension because of the thinning between the dimensions, things that normally are in a vibrational state that we can't see physically. We're now being able to see physically. So that's what the orbs are. They're quite, quite wonderful. And now you have your own orb. Perhaps you'll be appearing to someone. Oh, you could call it a Merkaba, but, you know, the Merkaba is really complicated to visualize, and it's very simple to visualize yourself in a translucent globe. So, or a magic bubble, if you will. Another really wonderful thing that I like to use or have used in the past is a vast Himalayan mountain. And just visualize yourself walking up a path to an enormous and solid, beautiful Himalayan mountain peak. And as you approach it, there's a hidden entrance that suddenly opens. Nobody can see it but you. And you walk into it, and it seals behind you, so you're completely inside this Himalayan mountain. You could call it the Koh Anar, which means the mountain of light. So go into the Koh Anar, and you're completely protected. No one can be in that mountain but you, unless you invite them in. You might want to invite the Master Jesus or one of the teachers that you particularly resonate with, that you have complete trust and confidence in. But that would be at your own discretion. Otherwise, nothing and no one can intrude in your Himalayan mountain peak. Nobody can get inside there. Nobody can harm you or touch you or get at you in any way. Those of you who may be experiencing any kind of a sense of oppression or any kind of entity interference, you can use some of these techniques if you like. There are many, many ways that you can visualize and keep Sankraskant your particular sanctuary so that nothing and no one can intrude. Before you go to sleep at night, you can do that too. Sometimes people use a golden pyramid of light in a similar manner. You can do that too. You know, you can make it any way that will work for you. So, what is samadhi? And again, when we say that word, we get the immediate impression that it's not what we have or that we're going to have to work for many lifetimes to achieve this. Or we get the image of Himalayan mendicants and yogis, and we get the impression of anything but our daily modern world, don't we? Yeah, really. Anything but life 101 in, 21st century. And we get visions of these mountain remote peaks, the inaccessible ashrams, the Indian mountain ranges and caves. I was in Sikkim, India, and when I looked at the map, there wasn't any flat land. The whole of Sikkim, which is a country within a country in India, is just mountain peak after mountain peak after mountain peak of white, snowy mountains. That's it. And I was thinking, wow, how many of the adepts and masters and rishis and yogis and Shambhala and all the wonderful things are contained in those wonderful mountain ranges. And we had the joy of going all through Sikkim and Darjeeling and up into Kalimpong, where the Roriks live for the last 8 years of Helen O'Rourke's life, and where the Agni Yoga books were written that she had taken through direct transcription through her master, the Master Maurya. Oh, marvelous experiences we had. But those beautiful mountain ranges. Do you know, beloved, that you can access those mountain ranges inside yourself? I've told you before, as within, so without. As without, so within. As above, so below. And you have within you everything that you see outwardly. In fact, I couldn't even have been in Sikkim and Darjeeling and Shambhala, the places I've been, if I hadn't already accessed and discovered them within. So know that the inner realms of consciousness are absolutely unlimited. You have every access to everything divine and beautiful and holy that you could ever, ever want. You don't even have to get into an airplane and travel. You can just move in your spiritual inner awareness to those beautiful, beautiful realms. While I was in India in 1972, I went to have my leaves, my Sanskrit leaves from the book of Bhrigu called the Bhrigu Nadis or the Bhrigu Shastras that are there for everyone. You know, everyone has their whole history written by one of the seven sages. This one, in this case, was the sage Bhrigu. And there's several places on the planet, or at least in India, I don't know about the planet, but in India where you can have these Nadi Shastras read. And it's interesting because when you go to this, this man who has been reading he's called Chaya Shastri because they measure your chaya, shadow. They measure your shadow to determine what page that they're going to take, because everything that's ever happened about you since the beginning of your sojourn as a soul is written in the book of Bhrigu in this case. There are seven different sages and they've each written, but this is the book of Bhrigu, which was highly recommend it. And it was interesting because it said to me that at a certain age, I would live from that time onward in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Now, I arrived at that age 11 years ago. And 11 years ago, I had a very profound change of consciousness, which I referred to as being born again. And I truly took on a different life. And then I remembered, oh gosh, that's what the Book of Bhrigu said would happen to me at that age. Wow, I wonder if that's what it was. But it was so different from what I had imagined in my mind samadhi to be like, or Nirvikalpa Samadhi in particular to be like, because that's God consciousness. And it's interesting because it says in India that you can only hold your body in this dimension for 21 days after you enter Nirvikalpa Samadhi. In other words, you have to go in and out of it. You can't stay in it all the time, because if you do, you will drop your body. It falls away like a dry leaf. In other words, you have to have some ego consciousness, some duality consciousness going on, some body identification going on here in order to stay here. You get too pure, and like ivory soap, you float. That's why very often yogis will take on some impediment if they're supposed to be here to teach. And I'm a yogi who came back to do what I'm doing, to teach. So I would be one of those yogis that has done that, has taken on some impediment to be able to anchor myself here long enough to stay here. And it was a choice on my part to come in to be here at this time. So I've had 11 years to examine samadhi. And so what I'm sharing with you tonight is very much out of my direct experience of becoming reacquainted with the whole concept of what it is and seeing how actually quite normal it is. It isn't anything spooky. And you know, I'm absolutely certain that all of us listening to this show at this point have, in a majority of instances, had lives in hermitages and ashrams and convents and monasteries. And you've been yogis, you've been gurus. Some of you have had to really dummy down in order to come into this lifetime because you were asked to come in to be of service at this time of the Earth's ascension and transfiguration into a higher dimensional state. So some of you are jivan muktas, your liberated souls that have chosen to come in simply to be of service. And you don't really have any other reason to be here other than to be here on, you know, for others. It's a bodhisattva thing, you know, where you come in, or like Krishna said, having no desire to act, I act for the benefit of all sentient beings. And this is the same kind of mindset that a bodhisattva has. They come in, or an avatar. So we come down from a higher state to be of service. And when I speak to people, I never assume that they're beginners. I just don't even go there. I don't believe that anyone on the planet today is a rank, unexperienced neophyte, at least not the people that I speak to or that would listen to a show like this or who I would be involved in speaking with, because you will attract to yourself the ones that are supposed to hear what you have to say, the ones that you are encoded for, and vice versa. So in my point of view, we're all ancient divine beings. We're all spiritual sojourners having a very temporary human experience and field trip, if you will. And thus we can build upon what we've already practiced before in other times and places. So let me explain briefly what actually samadhi is. And then we can take it from there. So the state of samadhi as it is currently known in yogic understanding and how we can practice it in its modern application in our daily lives while living in the world is our topic tonight. And there's basically two forms of samadhi. Samadhi means sama buddhi. Sama means same or equal. And di or buddhi means the spiritual awareness. So it's to develop the state of equal-mindedness. That's what it means, to have a sense of equal-mindedness or unity consciousness or at one-ment with regards to all things. Everything is seen through the lens of the higher unified field that we call Christ consciousness or spiritual inner awareness. So there's basically two kinds. There's sa vikalpa and nir vikalpa. Sa vikalpa means with attributes. Vikalpa means attributes or qualities. Sa means with. So sa vikalpa samadhi is a state of self-realization where you are aware that you are a divine being, and you also have an experience of being in God. You have a separate sense of divine connection. That's what makes that with attribute. In nirvikalpa, nir means without. So without agitation or qualification, when you go into nirvikalpa, this is most often where you drop back and fall asleep, because there is no mental ideation or forms whatsoever. This is the state of being completely absorbed and merged in God. Now, 9 times out of 10, what happens is that people will fall back into what's called the etheric realm, and they will go totally unconscious. That is a real challenge that I have also had great difficulty in trying to surmount and master. In fact, in India, the yogis will go to all sorts of extraordinary lengths to stay conscious when they are in samadhi, because it has been likened to deep sleep. It's been likened to deep sleep. The only difference is the body is asleep and dead, literally dead to the world, but you, as a spiritual consciousness, are wide awake. And I don't even know how to describe that more clearly. It's to be asleep and dead to the world and wide awake as a spirit inside yourself without going to sleep. Even though your body, I have seen my own teacher, John Roger, in that state where it looks like his body's dead. It's not even breathing. It breathes like every 15 minutes, and he's fully awake because he's a fully developed spiritual traveler. And he's wide awake, but his body, he looks like it's dead. Like I said, it barely breathes. And also when you're in that state, the breath is suspended. In fact, in many cases, these yogis are buried sometimes for yugas. Yugas, you know, many ages under, you know, they're buried, and they're in nirvikalpa samadhi, which is like a spiritual hibernation, if you will. There's a story about Sai Baba going to a tree in a forest with some of his college boys, and he instructed them to dig at the root of the tree, but carefully. And then he slowed them down. He said, now very carefully with your hands, brush the soil away. And as they did, the top knot of a yogi in nirvikalpa samadhi, in spiritual suspension of animation, this yogi's top knot, you know, they put their hair on top of their head to protect their crown chakra. This yogi was uncovered and brought out of samadhi by Sai Baba. And he had been sleeping there and waiting until the avatar would come to awaken him. I understand that two of the brothers were found. Nobody talks about this, but I understand that two of the brothers from the Brotherhood, those big, tall, 14-foot Syrian beings, or 27-foot, I forget how high they were really, really big, really big, were found in suspended animation in the one of the chambers of, I think it was the Great Pyramid of Giza. They found the actual Osiris and sacred repose. So these are real things, but you know, you have to know somebody that is consciously aware of these things, because they certainly aren't going to be on the evening news. But expansions of awareness are what we're talking about here. And in the expansions of awareness that we all experience on the return of our awareness to our eternal wholeness. So you might say these are states that we all pass through on our way back to where we've never truly left. So back to nirvikalpa samadhi. Another person who is in that state all the time, and so far as I know, it's the first time this state, the person is able to maintain the body while they're in that state and function, is the Sri Satya Sai Baba in India. And he's in that nirvikalpa and saw probably nirvikalpa because he doesn't have any ideation of otherness aside from the divine self that he is. Interesting, don't you think? So equal-mindedness is what we're talking about, equanimity. And a spiritually conscious, awake, and aware person, a true yogi, is joyful and at peace no matter what is going on in their life. Nothing stands in the way of their divine loving. Baba says it like this, nothing can come in the way of my smile. And even when he has to act out as if he's cross with someone to discipline them for some reason, he says he never loses that joy and that peace. He's, you know, he enacts the role that's appropriate, but doesn't lose himself in it by identifying with it. And that's what we're called to do. In equanimity, we're in a state that's remaining poised and centered no matter what condition you find yourself in. Regardless of how your body feels, or what moods pass through your emotions, or what thoughts flit through your mind, you stay poised and centered in divine detachment. I've also called it the objective observer, but actually what I'm talking about is deeper than that. The objective observer would be more of soul awareness, more of the developing soul awareness, conscious soul awareness. But actually what we're talking about here is moving more into atmic awareness, or what we call monadic awareness, non-dualistic oneness with God. So it is neutral. It is a witness conscience as you move through the daily whatever it is you do. It's also called soul transcendence because you move into the soul awareness and you transcend in the soul above the lower dimensional planes. It is also the practice of non-judgment, because when you're practicing neutral witness consciousness, you don't get snagged into passing judgment on the Maya, you know, on the dream field and the actors in the dream. You watch it all as scenery, but you don't get emotionally snagged into it. It's practicing non-reaction, because unless you identify with the Maya, you're not going to react. And it's staying present and centered in your loving, or as many people call it, it's holding the light. What does that mean? It means staying centered in the light field that you are without letting it, without losing it. Always staying conscious and aware that you are the light. You are the living light. You are the living love. You identify with that. So you'll always notice that self-realized, spiritually ripened souls are practicing this state of divine detachment and neutrality and the neutral or objective observer. They're spiritually centered and they're emotionally centered. Do you ever fall out of it? Sri Ramakrishna said that as long as you have a body, you can fall. You can fall into a lower state of consciousness as long as you're in a human body. So it's like constant and continual vigilance. We have to be vigilant. The Bible says we have to be vigilant for the kingdom of God. We have to be vigilant for God and his righteousness. And so, yes, we have to be very consciously vigilant. as long as we're walking around in this world, which is just, you know, constant booby traps to get us locked into the Maya and the illusion. So, you know, this state of equal-mindedness looks like composure, it looks like peacefulness, it looks like remaining serene and non-affected, and it very much involves non-interference. And, you know, all reaction, if you think about it, is akashic violence. Why? Well, when you react out of ego, you are exerting violence. You're not in the state of ahimsa or nonviolence. You do violence when you lash out at someone with emotive energy. When you criticize, when you judge, when you speak harshly, when you venture spleen, when you go into a rant, all of that is violence, akashic violence. And we learn to move through the different dimensional levels of ahimsa, of nonviolence. And eventually, we don't even allow our minds to go into any state of violence. So it starts with the physical body, it goes into the emotions, and then it goes into the mind, and then it goes into the spirit, to where we realize that there's only us living. There's only the one self that's portrayed in every form that we see outside. There's only the one. There's only the one beloved. And then, of course, we don't react anymore, because you can only react if you think there's somebody out there separate from you. So it also looks like self-determination, because you began to consciously determine your responses. So this requires our exercising of conscious self-direction. You know, you don't live as a victim or as an effect of your surroundings anymore. You're very proactive in manifesting that state of consciousness that is your preference. You know, the outer world, you don't pay much attention to it. It's going to do what it does. But you're very intent in maintaining your own sense of reality, your own sphere of reality, let's say. So self-management is our task. And what can sometimes throw us out of balance and off-center and leave us vulnerable to reacting is primarily not taking care of ourselves. You know, not taking care of ourselves. What does that mean? It means that it's our responsibility as a spiritually accountable person to keep balanced in every level of our life. Every level of your life needs to be maintained. You'll notice everything in life is either waxing or waning. It's either in a state of being vivified, which we'd call centrophy, or it's in a case of decay, which we'd call entropy. So you can look at everything in your life. Are you waxing? Are you growing? Are you recharging and vivifying yourself? Or are you in the state of decay and decline? And when you're in the state of decay and decline, you've lost contact consciously with the Holy Spirit, which is the resurrection power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead. And you have that same power in you because the Holy Spirit lives inside you as its dwelling, as its temple. So we need to stay spirit-filled, spirit-connected, spirit-infused, spirit-filled. That's that radiant energy that we bring in with the breath. When I say take a deep breath, you breathe in the breath of God, the breath of life, the breath of vivification, the electrical charged prana enters you and brings in that Holy Spirit, that whole spirit. So everything in the material world, including your body, requires maintenance. And we're going to look at this in the different levels now. So number one, an important area to keep in balance is your physical health. If you don't have a healthy body, you won't have a healthy mind. If you don't have a healthy mind and a healthy body, These are not only going to interrupt your spiritual practice, but they will be too weak to hold really powerful spiritual energy. And I think that's why many people are leaving right now physically, because their bodies really can't hold up under the stress of any more power going through them. They're kind of burning out. That needn't be so. We could recharge and regenerate, but a lot of people don't seem to be opting for that at this time, unless, of course, they do. I guess you can always change your mind about that. But it's very, very important to have at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. No more than that, because if you sleep more than 8 hours, your body goes into what's called tamoguna, which is sluggishness and inertia. You become too dense if you sleep too much. And Sai Baba has said that men need 7 hours of sleep a night and women need 8. And if you're under a lot of stress, you really need 8 hours of sleep. Maybe if you're in an extremely stressful situation, you'll find yourself sleeping more than that. But the perfect balance would be 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Now, you need to learn to rest physically, emotionally, mentally, and to revitalize. And the only way to do that is spiritually, through soul transcendence. In other words, you have to move yourself back into that inner sanctuary that we were practicing earlier and connect with yourself as a spiritual being. Some people call it their high self. I don't like to divide myself in that way. I think it's better to call it your I am presence, that you truly are. See it as who you are, not as something outside yourself. But connect to your reality, your true self, your divine self. And through that process, you recharge all the other levels. That's why you can go to sleep consciously at night and move right into the soul body. And that's the best way to go to sleep. You can get a soul travel tape from the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, MSIA, and play it just as you're going to sleep, and it'll guide you right into the soul planes. They also have a tape series or a DVD or a CD series called Spiritual Exercises, which is also excellent for that. So if you're on a conscious spiritual path, you will also want to exercise conscious self-management as to where, how, and with what you're going to expend your energy and your time. And know that where you cast your seed is where you're going to be reaping your harvest. So exercising conscious self-discipline is very important. Dissipating your energies is really not an option if you're on a conscious spiritual path of liberation for this lifetime. For example, alcoholic beverages absolutely dissipate and destroy, like poison, the vital energy that you're trying to build in your spiritual practice. Just don't even make that an option to drink alcoholic beverages of any kind. They're absolutely worthless if you're pursuing higher states of consciousness. Same thing with smoking and narcotics. They dull and numb out and densify the consciousness and lock you into lower states. Even your shamanic herbs do. They lock you into the astral plane. And we're not going into the summer land or the crack between the worlds or the astral plane where the shamans hang out. We're going back to the heart of God, to the very throne realms of the divine. And you need a clean, pure instrument to do that. So we're talking about higher states of consciousness, not astral states. So all of these things that people take to self-medicate, unless they're prescribed for some medical condition, are useless in terms of consciousness advancement. So gradually, you build up radiant spiritual energy called Aum, A-U-M. It's called Tejas. It's called Parashakti. There's different words for it. It's called Materia Lucida. It's called psychic energy. And you build up this radiant, powerful spiritual energy, which begins to strengthen like golden fire. Actually, it looks like blue fire, and then it turns into a golden liquid fire that goes through your nervous cell, your nervous system, your central nervous system, your spinal fluid, your brain, and all of the cells of your body. This is that resurrection energy, this ascension energy, until your whole body becomes filled with light. And even to the point that many, maybe not many, but some yogis have chosen to immortalize their bodies so that they don't ever die. That's a choice. Not all yogis choose to do that, or not all masters choose to do that, but that is an option at some point, depending on your mission. Excessive dissipation of sexual energies is another area that drains and robs this radiant energy, whether it's with your partner or by yourself. Be careful in how you expend that energy. It's just like taking all this beautiful energy and dumping it down the toilet when you don't manage yourself in those levels. And the only appropriate way to express sexual energy is with love and commitment. You know, when you have a loving exchange with another person where you give of your heart and you merge as one body and one flesh, which would be in a seriously committed relationship, only then is it appropriate. And does it build energy and not drain you? Otherwise, you're just dissipating. Excessive speech is another thing that 99.9% of people talk too much. All talking is unnecessary unless it has a specific function and purpose. You know, just light-minded speech and joking and saying stupid things for no reason is a waste of time and a waste of energy. And again, it's an affront to the akasha, the energy of life around us. We affront it when we talk too much, or we talk too loud, or we shout, or say things that are ugly or profane. So, in fact, you will not want to you will actually want to create a healthy, balanced lifestyle in which you make a conscious decision about everything you do in your life. You're going to be consciously deciding what you want to put in your body in terms of nutrition. You're going to be conscious of not eating too much, because when you eat too much, again, your body gets lazy and dense, and it can't hold that light and that power and that love. And then you spend all your time trying to manage poor health, which then, you know, really, really takes up way too much time and effort. You're going to want to consciously focus about what you say, what you give your energy to, and what you do. And the operative word here is conscious. You want to be more conscious of how you live and how you're choosing to express the energy and the divine shakti and power that you have as an embodiment of the divine. So people who are not balanced and centered are basically asleep. They're unconscious and they're on autopilot. You know, there's nobody home. And they are not taking responsibility for self-management. If they're not doing that, they're not initiates of the higher consciousness. People who are initiates are disciples. They're all disciples. And a disciple means that they are consciously submitting to the discipline of living a spiritually accountable life. So if that's you, you might want to ask yourself why you're not availing yourself of this opportunity for conscious liberation in this lifetime. Sai Baba said, be aware this time will not come again if you do not take this opportunity of saving yourself, of moving into these higher states of awareness. This time will not come again, and you're proving that you're too weak to grasp great things. And I don't want that for any of us who are listening to these shows. I want us to all be spiritual warriors and spiritual heroes, and to receive everything that God has for us in this lifetime. So equanimity is to be practiced in each of these following areas. Number one, maintain your composure and equanimity with regard to physical discomfort. Very often people allow how their body feels to make them grouchy, to make them unloving, to make them short and mean with people. And that just shows that they haven't mastered that level. And there's no reason for that. Your physical body should not have any effect whatsoever upon you and how you love and care for others and behave with others. You are not your body. And even though the sensual feedback makes it seem like you are, the key to this whole thing is the more you resist that which is, the more it's going to persist. So you might say it's almost like a test that you create for yourself as a soul, to see if you can learn to flow with life instead of fighting and resisting and complaining and going on and carrying on about the things you have to go through. There's always going to be duality here. But focusing upon the negative is always going to increase that in your awareness more than the other. So we need to learn equanimity in pleasure and in pain, and to stay equal-minded with regard to the extremes of temperature. Right now we're having extreme temperature here in North America, and many parts of the world are having tremendous heat. And then the winters have been equally bad, and all the things that are happening. We have to learn how to stay centered regardless of what's going on in the outer temperature. Tibetan yogis, for example, practice tummo. They will go out in sub-zero weather, naked, wrapped in a wet sheet, and practice generating internal heat and drying the sheet on their body. That's probably, some of us have had that practice in the past. So you can draw upon that. If you have that in your data bank somewhere, you can draw upon that ability that you have achieved already in another time and place. I met a woman who had been with an incredible Burmese monk when I was in India. And this monk went into a state of Agni Samadhi. In other words, he went into oneness with fire, and he was sealed in a fire that burned at the highest degree of heat. In fact, I was told that Sai Baba actually lit the fire for this great yogi. Sai Baba lit the fire, and it burned for 72 hours with this monk in meditation inside the structure. And what he did was that he took his inner Agni, his inner fire, and brought it up to exact oneness with the vibration of the outer fire. And he became one with the fire so that it did not even burn him. You know, the story of the three men, Abshak, something other, Shak and Abednego in the Bible, that was thrown into the fire. Abshak, Meshach, and Abednego, there you go. They were thrown in this tremendous fire because they refused to bow down to the idol of the king. And they weren't touched. They didn't even have the smell of smoke on their clothing when they came out. Nothing was burned. Nothing was singed. How did they do that? The fire of their spiritual bodies was activated, this time by grace, because there was a fourth figure seen moving about in the ashes like a son of God. So apparently the Lord, or one of the Lords, was present with them in that fiery furnace. So this yogi was in such a divine state of consciousness that when the woman gave me to hold in my hand some of the ashes that had been in that fire, I began to shake and weep, and I went into a deep altered yogic state, just holding the ashes and seeing his picture. It was tremendous. Little, you know, Burmese monk. Incredible master. Also, I saw Sai Baba. He wears the same thin robe, no matter how hot it is or how cold it is. He's been up in the Himalayas, you know, with bare feet and his little thin robe. But what I remember was one time it was pouring rain, and we were sitting in Whitefield in Vrindavan, his ashram there near Bangalore. And we didn't think he would come out and give darshan because it was pouring rain, and it was quite muddy. And he would have to walk from his house in the back to where we were sitting under this big tree, under a pandal, you know, mantapa, I forget what to call it in English, shelter. And I remember he walked right a few inches from me, and I was looking at his feet because he was walking ankle deep in mud. And his feet were dry. They had no mud on them whatsoever. And he didn't have a single rain spot on his silk robe, although it was pouring rain. But his hair, I remember it distinctly, was filled with diamond-like sparkling drops of water. It was so beautiful. It looked like his whole head was sparkling diamonds. So, those are some of the things I've seen. So, we need to be also equal-minded with regard to insects. And any of us who've lived in India have had the trial by mosquitoes. It seemed in India for me that every time, in the daytime there were flies and little bugs that loved to fly into your eyes the minute Sai Baba would walk out. And then at night you'd be eaten alive by mosquitoes. And you just have to focus upon really transcending that and not allowing that to block your experience of being with this great soul. In the movie Eat, Pray, and Love, I hope they show Liz Gilbert's experience with the mosquitoes and the ashram. She had quite an encounter with mosquitoes, and at one point she just let them completely cover her and have at it, and she was trying to meditate, and she ignored them. And boy, that's hard to do, so you can imagine what an advanced soul that woman is. But I would call that the trial by mosquitoes, yes, maybe the initiation. So equal-mindedness also with regards to all physical conditions. And again, you have to master the tongue if you want to master the sex organ. The tongue and your sexual drive are very strongly connected. And so is the throat chakra and the sexual chakra, which is why athletes and great singers, opera singers, have to abstain from sexual expression before a concert or before a big, athletic event, because it will weaken them, if they expend sexual energy when they're trying to build their energy to sing or to do an athletic event. So discipline yourself to eat to live. Baba calls food medicine. So eat to live, but don't live to eat. Really watch your tongue. Also, we practice equal-mindedness with regards to our emotions. Byron Katie's process, which consists of asking yourself four questions whenever you are upset, is excellent. Very good for your emotions, emotional imbalance, and your projected mental assumptions. And these are the four questions. Whenever you're upset, you ask yourself, is it true? Number two, can you really know for certain that this is true? Number three, what do you get by maintaining this belief? Number four, who would you be if you didn't have this belief? Very important. Emotional equanimity is the area that we have daily opportunities to practice. When we watch TV, when we converse on the phone, in social exchanges, can you be neutral and non-reactive? Can you stay centered? Can you watch what you're saying? Can you consciously direct yourself in a positive way? And we need to practice equanimity in the face of praise or criticism, approval or disapproval. Regardless of people's attitudes, opinions, words, behavior, choices. In other words, one of the biggest key to emotional balance is to ask yourself, is this mine to handle? Because we learn to be non-inflictive on other people's choices in life, unless it's our specific duty to monitor someone or be responsible for someone. We should leave everyone alone. Let them do what they need to do to work out their karma and to handle their lives. If they ask for assistance, then of course you step forward and do what you can to assist. But otherwise, leave them alone. It's not yours to handle. It's their karma. It's their life. It's their lesson. Don't get in the way of another soul learning the lesson that they have chosen. Remember, they have chosen that lesson. Practicing discernment and discrimination. In Sanskrit, called vairagya, which is discernment, and viveka, which is discrimination. And the work, you know, by Byron Katie is vairagya and viveka. That is exactly what that is. It develops your skill of determining what is true from what is not. And true in the eternal sense, you know. And I think one of the best and most useful mantras you can use every day is, this too shall pass. You know, this too shall pass. So equanimity with regard to your sacred cows. We all have them lowing in the pastures of our minds. And these are the opinions of what we think is right or wrong. You know, why even go there? We're moving into the unified field. Why even bother yourself with what is right or wrong? Why not just be present with that which is, without opinion and without judgment and without reaction? Know that there are all different levels of teaching and consciousness for each level of teaching. So, of course, each level is going to contradict the next level, because each level you move up on, there's going to be a different teaching and a different point of view for that level of consciousness. So quit your arguing and debating. Only people who are not aware and awake ever waste time arguing. Truly conscious, aware people can see all religious and political points of view. They can really understand all points of view because they're up high enough that they can see all of that and see the appropriateness of all of that. And, you know, people get into such a flash fire dispute in a heartbeat over, you know, politics or lifestyle choices or religious or cultural or political controversies. Just think about how many wars have been sparked by these things. And, you know, enlightened people are silent. They never enter into arguments about those things. It's just not, it's so unimportant. So the more expanded the spiritual consciousness, the more you can see and understand and accommodate the points of view of everyone without viewing differences as an attack on your own preferences. See, that's why people react negatively, because they think that you're attacking them if you don't agree with them. And the key here is realizing that reaction and defensiveness is always the knee-jerk reaction of the ego. And, you know, it just shows you where your work is cut out for you. The true self that you are is always neutral. But the ego always has to be right. It always has to have the last word. It always has to win the fight, and it views every affront as a personal attack. So a good practice is to observe when you're starting to feel hot under the collar over something that someone has said. Just stay present. Don't react. Just observe it. Examine the sensations without reacting, and be still and observe it until it begins to dissipate. When you see it from the higher consciousness, it'll dissipate immediately. So whenever you notice resistance in somebody that you're talking to, immediately go into silence, because they're fighting you because they feel threatened in what you're saying. So just go into silence, but never, never argue with people, ever. It's totally pointless. So practice conscious self-direction, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And meditate. Ask yourself, like Sri Ramana Maharshi. His only meditation was, who am I? So ask yourself, am I a body? Am I my emotions? Am I my feelings? Am I my thoughts? And if not, what is beyond all of these passing states? Who am I? So you will move into the self if you meditate in that way, if you begin to really contemplate. So it's fine to state your preferences, but don't demand that it has to be a certain way. It's fine to strike a compromise as long as you don't play false to your inner self and your personal values. You can always elect to remain silent and to move your body or your mind elsewhere. You can repeat a mantra in your mind when you can't escape someone's rant. People who rant and yell at you are trying to control you. You're not reacting, in turn, totally disempowers their control agenda. So the best way to handle a yeller and a ranter is just not to do anything at all, just to be quiet. And, of course, shield yourself. Go into your koanar, into your mountain of light or your bubble. You know, don't let them invade your aura, rape your aura with their anger. But and get away from them if you can. But if you can't, then at least don't lend fuel to the fire. It always takes two to create a fight. One of the two has to decide to not participate in the fight to end the potential dispute. And what if a war was declared and no one came to fight? What if everyone collectively refused to participate in conflict? You know what? I believe that that time is coming really, really soon. So know that aware, conscious people never argue. They don't defend themselves. They don't justify their choices. They are free and whole within themselves. They are secure, and they seek no one's approval, and they make no demands on anyone else. They are centered in their true divine self and identity, and therefore they are secure. They have no worries and no cares, for they trust the divine spirit within them, operating within them, within everyone else, and within the universe. Whether or not it seems obvious, that's the truth. They know God and are one with God. And they know that, and they live in God, and God lives in them. And they know that wherever they are, God is present, and they enjoy the loving and the peace of the presence of God at all times and in every circumstance. So some of the reference points for divine consciousness that you can ask yourself and find within yourself. I will ask you the questions, and then, you know, you can contemplate it later if you like. Have you ever truly been happy for no reason at all? Can you find that place in your memory? Was there ever a time that you were truly happy for no reason at all? Have you ever experienced pure joy without any outer cause or reason of any kind? Have you? Have you ever been in a very challenging time or crisis, and for no reason you felt such a sense of deep inner peace and calm? Have you ever totally transcended all sense of time and space and even awareness of your physical body and this world? Have you ever just lost all sense of it and been caught up in something transcendental and beyond? You know, all the mystics refer to these spiritual states as dying daily, and being reborn to eternal life. St. Francis, in his famous prayer, "Lord, make me an instrument of your peace," in the very last line of that prayer, he wrote, "And it is in dying that we are born to eternal life." Now, all mystics understand what it means to die to this world. St. Paul said, "I die daily." He also said, "For me to live is Christ, and to be in the world is to die." So all mystics, all self-realized people, talk like that. They understand what that means, to be dead to the world and alive in Christ, alive in God. And this is what all spiritual travelers practice and teach. And St. Francis of Assisi was on the lineage of the spiritual travelers. What's a spiritual traveler? A spiritual traveler is one who is able to consciously travel multidimensionally into the imperishable God realms and return in full spiritual awareness. Not only that, but they can teach you how to do that too. A traveler can not only take you there, which many people can take you there, but the trick is to secure you there so that you can remain there. And that's the job of the spiritual travelers. They secure you in those higher levels. They take you there. They introduce you to those levels. They show you how to operate in those levels. And then they give you the keys to spiritual inner awareness so that you can secure yourself there and make that your abode. In this life, you can experience it. And then when you leave this life, they initiate you so that you can inhabit that realm and not have to reincarnate again. So the spiritual travelers teach you how to live in divine indifference to the things of this world. They teach you how to live in the world with conscious spiritual accountability and awareness, with divine detachment and neutrality, and at the same time, to love and serve God in everyone and everything you encounter. They teach an active form of meditation called spiritual exercises. In a spiritual exercise, you consciously go to God. You don't sit passively and wait for God to come to you. You chant the hue or the anai hue, and you move your consciousness in your inner awareness to where you would be. You can mock up, like we did at the beginning of the show. You can mock up an inner sanctuary. You can mock up a divine interactive of some sort within your own imagination. But at some point, that imagination takes on a life of its own, and you realize, oh, wow, I didn't make that up. It's really real. And that's how you create that conscious experience on the inner planes. So a person who is living in samadhi has become the miracle. They're miracle-minded. They see miracles all around them. They are a miracle because truly they are able to transcend every form of limitation through higher laws that they are able to move into through grace and activate and quicken. And they are an inspiration to all of us because while they're in the world has not touched them. The world has not pulled it down to its level. They instead are like great tugboats that pull, you know, the collective boat of human consciousness through the waters of samsara and into the safe berth and shore of the divine kingdoms. So they are truly happy and filled with joy and peace because they're living in samadhi, in God consciousness, and divine communion and unity all the time, exercising conscious awareness of who and what they are forever, and they are free and at peace with all that is. And that's what I have to share with you this evening. Let's chant the hue and take a deep breath. Hue. Listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command, we say to you, Vasu Barakas Adonai, which means, in brotherly love, we bid you farewell in the name of the Lord Adonai.